Alien Frequencies Open, and welcome to Enterprising Individuals, the Star Trek discussion podcast that boldly goes into excruciating detail about the series, characters, and stories of the Star Trek universe. I'm your host, Aaron Coker, a.k.a. Caliban, and Archer is the only negotiator who yells more than the opposing parties. I'm joined on this episode once again by Mikan Hanna. Mika is the host of the Sailor Noob podcast, an exploration for experts and newcomers to the fashion, food, and culture of the classic anime series Sailor Moon. She's also the co-host of the Just Enough Trope podcast, and she's a frequent guest on Star Trek Discoverage. Mika, welcome back to the show.
Alex, welcome to the show. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you back aboard. Today we'll be talking about Ceasefire, the 15th episode of the second season of Star Trek Enterprise. Everyone remembers the captains of Star Trek, whose names are forever etched into our nerd souls. Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Sam Beckett? For whatever reason, Captain Jonathan Archer and the show he appeared on, Star Trek Enterprise, are often left out of the accolades afforded to the Trek franchise. When Enterprise was the last word, you could attribute it to franchise exhaustion on the part of both the creators and the audience. But with the revival of Trek storytelling with Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, Strange New Worlds, Section 31, et al., the omission of Enterprise seems even more glaring. And one wonders what one has to do to get some recognition for a clumsy yet earnest and enthusiastic yet complicated series. It's time to call a ceasefire on Enterprise. But we'll talk about that a little later in the show. First, Mika, it's great to have you back on the program. And you were last here in October. Well, you were here earlier in the year for a new show, but you were here in October to talk about the DS9 episode, Indiscretions, a.k.a. the Ow My Butt episode. And things in the world were in flux then. I mean, they're still in flux, maybe slightly less so now, but, you know, pre-election last year, things were a certain way.
We didn't know which way it was going to go.
Yeah, well, we didn't know how a lot of things were going to go.
Yeah, that's true.
And we still don't.
Here's the thing. The pandemic is still happening. People like to pretend that it's over, but it's still going on.
Yeah.
It's a little disconcerting.
Yeah. We'll see. It is disconcerting or concerning or disconcerting.
Did I say that wrong? Disconcerting?
Yeah, people say, I feel like all day long I listen to podcasts. I'm also on one. It's a bunch of well-educated, like well-read people who don't necessarily talk to people unless it's on a podcast. And so you hear a lot of like mispronunciations of words and of proper names, and you hear a lot of people using saying irregardless. And I don't mean to be an intellectual snob, but I'm an intellectual snob. And
I'm guilty of that myself.
But I mean, like, it bothers me because it, and people say never get down on somebody for mispronouncing a word that it means that they've read it. You know, it means that they learned it from a book.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, sure. But it also means that they haven't said it to somebody else. They haven't been in discussion with other members of the intelligentsia where that would be corrected.
I just think that nobody's corrected me because I feel like I've been saying disconcerting a lot.
Yeah. I think that at this point, disconcerting is essentially added to the lexicon because people just say it.
I think it just seems like that would be the word, you know, that would be used, not disconcerting. Like, why is there a T in there? What's going on?
Because
English.
Because you're not, if it's concerting, it's bringing things together. But if it's disconcerting, it's dividing.
It's not concerned.
Opinions on it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Concert means, you know, to come together. This is a great way to start a show about Commander Shran. But we'll get there.
Well, he would definitely correct my wording, I'm sure.
He would say, this is disconcerting. Sir, that's not correct. We're saying disconcerting from now on.
I put it in the lexicon.
Your show, Sailor Noob, is growing by leaps and bounds.
Yes.
Your podcast. And you've had a few extra developments recently.
Yeah. So we've been doing the podcast for a little while now, and we are now covering the Sailor Moon R, which is the second season of the 90s anime. And we're kind of towards the end of R. So we got the baddies are the Black Moon Clan, which, you know... Overall, I really
anybody
enjoy
who's,
them.
Who's a clan? It's probably a bad news, right?
I know, but they're
Foot
they're,
Clan.
Right.
There are many fictional examples of bad clans.
Sure. Yeah. But they're entertaining.
You say, yeah, the clans are also entertaining.
Okay. No, that's not what I meant.
You say '90s, but most people probably remember it from its run on like Toonami, right? In the
well, but. That kind of started in the late 90s.
Was that in the late 90s?
Yeah. I mean, it was later.
Voltron. I didn't have cable, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably
gosh,
Dragon Ball.
Else? I think Dragon Ball was on there. Yeah. I got like satellite later, so I'm pretty sure like Pokemon was on there and Gundam Wing.
Elon Musk has satellite now. He's got a lot of satellites now. I know what you mean, though.
Yeah, satellite TV. I don't want to be on the same playing field as Elon Musk for anything. Anyways.
It's tough to grow up with emeralds in your pockets.
Oh,
your pants are so heavy.
So sad for him. Aw, single tear. But, yeah, so that's been going on. And then we have... and we just started doing a podcast that covers Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon, which is also known as PGSM, and that's the live action Sailor Moon series that wow. came out in the early 2000s.
Is it like a Power Rangers type
thing? It is very much like Power Rangers. It's called tokusatsu is the style. Like,
oh, delicious.
Yeah, I know, right? Sounds delicious.
I'll take two.
But it's just kind of like the way that it's filmed and, like, you know, a lot of people who are the bad guys are in these, like, suits.
Big rubber costumes.
Rubber costumes. Yeah, and, like, the camera angles. And it's just everything is ridiculous and dialed up to 11.
And so this is, like, the 90s, right?
Well, the live action's early 2000s.
Oh, it's the 2000s. Okay,
yeah.
All right. So they're doing rubber suits.
Yes.
Obviously, there's still tokusatsu shows
yes. on yes. TV. Kamen Rider, yeah.
Okay, yeah. But are they like CGI now, or is it still, do they keep this tradition
now.
Of the rubber costumes?
You know, I think there is a debate about that going on with tokusatsu. Like, is it really tokusatsu if it is all CGI? I think there is, at least within some communities, there's definitely a push. Communities. Some people who do these shows, there's definitely...
I'm from West Tokusatsu.
Right, right.
I say I'm from Tokusatsu, but, you know, I don't want to explain it very. I'm from West Tokusatsu.
Right.
So I say I'm from Tokusatsu.
Exactly. So we'll get it. But I think that a lot of people feel like it loses something
if it's not
the rubber suit. And it just doesn't look the same.
I think there's a debate now, and we might talk about this a little later, in sci-fi, and specifically in Star Trek, about mm-hmm. how you can do so much with computer effects, and so why bother, you know, creating a big rubber monster or whatever when you can just do it in a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, a lot of maybe that rubber budget has gone to makeup and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Because a lot of the Star Trek, alien looks are much more rubbery.
Uh-huh.
But then if you've got a beast like the thing that they're fighting or they're worried about in the end of Discovery this last season.
Right.
The cloak monster or whatever. That's, you know, clearly that's just all a computer thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it was an old style episode or if it was Doctor Who or something, it would just be... throw a bunch of rags on that guy and then
right.
see what you can do.
Well, and I think, I don't know, I think there's like a debate to like a little bit of practical, a little bit of CGI. I think maybe somewhere down the road, middle of the road. Yeah. I mean, look at like The Mandalorian, for example.
Mando number 5. All right, there we go. I was
yeah.
trying to figure out what I was going to do with that.
You're welcome, I guess. Grogu, Baby Yoda, like,
okay.
Can you imagine
right.
if
streams crossed?
I know, but can you imagine if Grogu was all CG? I don't think people would find him as adorable.
Well, yeah, in that debate,
I don't.
Once again, you're leading me down the wrong path here, but
uh-oh.
The dark path. But that debate, you know, was ignited by the prequels in which they
yep.
gave a college try to a puppet Yoda, but clearly the geniuses who did the first Yoda were yep. not around to do the second one, and then they just switched it to CGI, and then went back into The Phantom Menace and
yep.
just made it CGI Yoda. So.
Yeah, right.
How would you have the puppet, like, flip around and...
Just don't do it.
don't have him flip around.
Yeah, there
yeah,
you go.
Maybe that.
And I would argue that anyways, because right. I don't need my Yoda to like do wicked flips to think he's cool, you know? Like, Yoda's already cool. He's freaking Yoda. Anyways.
The next time we see Grogu, he's going to be so tall. He's going to be 3 inches taller. And I bet Luke is going to teach him to do flips.
And he's going to be a teenager already.
Too.
And he's going to be like, whatever, Dad.
Yeah. My dad, you are not.
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right, and that's enough Star Wars.
Okay.
Hey, let's talk about Star Trek Enterprise.
Yes.
We're going to.
Yes,
and
we are.
Mm. I know that you finished recently a watch of the entire series.
I did.
All the way through.
Uh-huh.
Even watched the last one, although you were advised against it. You were doing that. I think you were doing that when you were on before, 6 or so months ago.
I believe so, yes.
More than 6, 9 months ago.
Yeah.
So 9 months, you've now given birth to your opinion of Enterprise.
Yeah.
It's a bouncing baby. What?
It's a bouncing baby Archer. Aww.
What?
No, I don't know.
What's your
know.
Opinion of the show?
My opinion is I think it's good and I think you should give it a shot. And also, I feel like I was saying this before when I was on before, but I just was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed it because it has such a bad reputation among fans as being horrible and, oh my gosh, the worst. And I don't think it deserves that, like, at all. I think it's very different from the other series, but I think that that's on purpose because of where it's supposed to, you know, be before, you know, the original series.
Well, sure.
It takes place before the Federation is officially formed.
Yeah.
And, you know, so before Kirk and his crew. So I just think it makes sense that it's different. And I enjoy differences, you know, especially I think that get emphasized in the first season, especially like they really do feel like they're astronauts and they're, you know, they're out there exploring space. And it really feels like there's a genuine curiosity and there's a little bit of innocence and naivete that goes along with that, too.
So why do you think people bounce off it, though? Because I can tell you, as a classic fan, a vintage fan, you know, we were not excited about it at the time, although it's possible that we didn't give it the chance that it needed. Mm. But I think also, you know, we've seen with the advent of these shows on streaming platforms that the numbers go up for a lot of them. You know, people were surprised a couple years ago to learn that people are just watching Voyager, watching it
which
all the time and loving
surprising.
It.
Kind of surprising.
And it's really had a renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like Enterprise has
no.
had that same tide lift to its boat.
No.
Its Enterprise boat.
Well, I mean, and...
So why do you think... do you think that there's something in the themes or in the presentation of the series? Like, why do you think that people go, oof, Enterprise?
I think maybe because it is so different. And people are like, this isn't Trek. This isn't...
I need phasers.
This isn't what I want.
And I better see some shields up in here.
Something like that. And then, like, you know, they were trying a lot of different things. And some things stuck and some things didn't. And, you know, like, they were trying to make it sexier. That was not necessary.
Yeah.
Although I feel like they kind of do that with Discovery. And that's okay. I don't know. But not as much.
I don't think Discovery is sexy.
Maybe not as so much.
I mean, the people on it are sexy, but I don't think that they are.
Okay, fair amount.
Rubbing oil on each other.
But
sorry, the disinfecting gel. Sorry.
Yeah, right. I don't know what it is, but I think people had it in their heads before it even aired that they weren't going to like it, and like I think that Archer is a great captain, and I think that, you know, Scott Bakula is a fantastic actor. And I mean, I really like him. I watched Quantum Leap growing up, so maybe he has a special place in my heart that maybe not every Trek fans share the same opinion.
Yeah.
But I think he's great. And I think a lot of the other characters on it are great too. I guess, you know, it just didn't stick for people.
You don't think it's anything thematic?
Well, okay, it's...
okay, sorry, I apologize.
You showed your hand.
As an interviewer, maybe I should just get to the effing point. You don't think it's that at all?
No, it is. Because later on, after the... I would say after the first season, and eventually it got to themes about 9/11, more or less, and people were not really happy to be exploring that so soon.
Well, there's such a tantalizing... disconnect because you think that they asked the questions too soon? You think that's what it was? Every single Rugrats was doing 9/11 episodes. Okay. Every form of entertainment was doing. Yeah. Titus was doing 9/11 episodes.
Uh-huh.
I just think that, like, okay, so maybe they didn't tackle it well, but it's funny because the whole, obviously things were going to get bad. We were always sending these bright-faced astronauts out to get their faces pushed in the mud, and then what are they going to do about it, right? That was always going to be what it is.
Yes.
And the fourth season, which everybody just loses their minds over, which I like fine. I just, you know, I think that it's more trying to force, and you have to because they're not going to get three more seasons, but force these themes in, you know, real fast.
Yeah.
And then also, like, the baby, the trip to Paul baby, what?
But anyway. I've got opinions about that.
But, yeah, well, luckily we're not talking about those episodes today.
No.
But, so, my problem with it is that, like, they do that, but it gets filtered through the lens of... international terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we gotta, let's roll, you know, put the truck nuts on the shuttlecraft, and we're gonna, you know, it through that sort of jingoistic lens.
Yeah.
When before, I think the idea was supposed to be, yes, we're proud as a species to be humanity. Yes, we've got this other, you know, the Vulcans are keeping us down, and so we want to prove ourselves, but we want to do it in such a way that we are adding ourselves to the international community, or intergalactic in this case.
Yes.
Community. And not like, yeah, humans. And then also realize they're doing that. And then have a couple episodes where, like, racist humans are like, yeah, humans. It's like, no, that's not the way to yeah, humans. You got to yeah, humans like this.
Right.
And this episode is a great example of, you know, Archer says it in the episode. He's like, we're at the table now. This is a crappy job, but I'm glad we got it because we can actually prove that we should be here talking to people and doing stuff.
And do some good.
We've only talked about four Enterprise episodes on this show, and this is the fourth. And the first three were Twilight, Similitude, and the Andorian Incident.
Mm-hmm.
I think what people consider three of the best episodes.
Sure, yes.
And they all deal in some way, except maybe Twilight, which is just a time travel-y, you know, fun time kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But they all deal with a unexpected twist or a failure or being confronted with something that's the quote-unquote right thing to do and doing something different.
Yeah.
And I think what defines Enterprise, at least in those episodes, and maybe as a series, is, you know, Picard would have found a way to have the Andorians discover on their own that Pajem is a listening facility, you know?
Sure.
Or Picard would have found a way to, you know, keep Sim alive in Similitude, or not, but then, like, been like, well, we'll make you happy, we'll do whatever, and you'll always be remembered.
Uh-huh.
Where instead, in Similitude, you've literally got, like, Archer yelling at Sim to be like, you're gonna do this, you're gonna, we're gonna take your brain out, and you're gonna like it.
Yeah.
Now put a gun to your head if I have to.
I know.
And it's like taking these storylines and these plots that we've done for 40 years at this point and going, like, but what about this?
Mm-hmm.
And going the other way. And I think being positioned at the end of a long, long run of Trek means that if you're going to do that, and Voyager ran into this too, because sometimes Voyager would do a TNG plot, but they go, but what if left instead of right? And you go, they went right because it was the right way to go.
Yeah, right.
Left is not the right way to go. But I feel like Enterprise steers into that, and you end up with, like, a lot of, like, decisions by the characters that are like, I don't like that.
I'm uncomfortable.
I don't think
with
it's
this.
Bad storytelling necessarily.
Yeah, right.
And I think fans have a hard time telling the difference between bad writing and bad storytelling.
Or yes, and I think that also fans have a problem, you know, when a character that they like does something that they don't like.
Yeah.
They have a real problem with that. And I understand that as a fan myself, because sometimes I have a problem with that too. But you have to take a step back and be like, this is a character.
Yeah.
This is a fictional character. They are flawed, and the story is trying to show that they are flawed. And it's okay if I don't like this one thing that they did one time.
Yeah, but people are uncomfortable because the characters in Trek live in this wonderful world.
This and so utopian
how
universe.
How flawed can they be?
Yeah.
I think luckily we've leaped completely over that, and I think that the characters in Discovery and so on and so forth, you know, are, it's fine that they're flawed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that is worked into the stories now, and I think that that really is a point of, you know, a thumbs up point
for
the new shows. And speaking of things that aren't exactly what they seem, the Andorians,
yes,
get a huge glow up in this series, and mm-hmm. also they go from characters who have, let's face it, pretty much always been side characters,
yes,
to players on the stage.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So because, what happened? Like,
remember,
why
this takes
did they
place 200
players?
Years before TNG,
oh,
where there are like
yeah.
no Andorians at all.
I don't have a good answer for that because there's nothing that really significant.
This is a show that will
that
stick.
Happens, you know, by this the will, end of the series.
This is a show that will stick any piece of latex on any part of anybody's body. But like, white wig and antenna, too tough. Too tough to do. Not doing that.
I don't understand it because I also was just thinking, you know, something I really like that they're featured heavily in this series
yeah.
and that we learn more about Andorians as you know, an alien culture and like what they're kind of like, and that they have this animosity with the Vulcans specifically and why that is, you know, which this episode deals with a lot, and just all the mistrust, you know, that goes on both sides.
Is that why you wanted to talk about this episode today? Ceasefire?
Well, the reason I wanted to talk about it was a couple of things. I guess I wanted to talk about an Enterprise episode because what we're already doing, you know, I wanted to, you know, highlight, you know, some of Enterprise's strengths and maybe try to convince some people that, hey, give it a try if you haven't given it a try, because I think you will be pleasantly surprised, just like I was. and at least that's the hope, right?
What can you get out of a Rick Berman and a tired Brandon Braga? You'd be surprised.
Well,
you will get an opening sequence that features only British and American explorers.
Yeah, okay.
I noticed that first time, long time, that I've watched the Enterprise intro
that.
Just to listen to Faith of the Heart. And as I'm watching all the things, I'm like, ah, yes, the HMS Enterprise. Ah, there's old Gus Grissom. Oh, the Shuttle Enterprise. These are all American people, if they're not British people before that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is weird.
I mean, like,
okay.
China's like, oh, we're going to Mars. I'll see you there in 2033.
Or Russia.
Yeah, and Russia. Yeah. So.
Right.
International Space Station.
Yeah,
I guess
right.
we do see that at some point.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
I But I think that's in the DNA of,
yes.
of Enterprise, unfortunately.
I guess it is a little bit. I just also really wanted to I think that this episode showcases Captain Archer being a diplomat and a mediator, which is something that he finds himself in quite a bit, I feel like, during the series. And I think that it's something that is done well, and he's a little bit of a different diplomat than Picard is.
For a negotiator, he's a great middleweight fighter.
He is.
It figures that, like, he sits down with both parties and he's like, come on, I gotta get this done. And they're like, okay, all right, sure. And by the end of the episode, you know, he's got blood streaming out of his nose because he's been in a knockdown, drag-out
yeah.
slobber knocker. And then it's like, oh, you're super convincing.
I know. I mean, he doesn't really do what, like, Picard does, like, try to convince people that it was their idea, you know, to come to terms with these sort of things. He is not above being all like, well, when you did this, it was that, and well, you know, and try to point out like what people are doing, which I don't know if it necessarily other people would think of that as a plus as a diplomat or not. But
well, the two parties that he's working with
are very difficult.
Yeah.
And with each other.
He's a guy, I guess he, you know, has lived under the... It's such brilliant casting, and we'll get to it in a bit. Gary Graham playing the alien who has sort of shepherded, you know, Earth for 100 years. When on Alien Nation, he played the Earthling who, you know, Earth was playing host to these refugee aliens for 25, 30 years or whatever. And so it's just a nice little flip-flop. But he knows how to talk to Vulcans.
Yes.
But also he knows Shran personally, and he's not above... you know, getting in a scrap to sort of prove his point.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So anyway, just from now on, before he walks into any negotiation, he's like, Trip, hit me in the face.
I want to like beaten up before I get down.
I need
down
a little
there.
Blood coming down.
Yeah, right.
And that's when I'm my most convincing.
Yes, and I'm a little harried. but also because this episode features Commander Shran, and who I love, and he's definitely a standout in the series. And I absolutely adored Jeffrey Combs. He is a chameleon and an absolute joy to watch him take on different characters throughout Trek and just really own them and make them his own. And they're all different.
Yeah. Imagine an alternate universe where Jeffrey Combs has a latex allergy.
Oof. I mean, he could still play all the different characters, just not with latex.
Yeah.
Give me a rubber suit.
Maybe he's developed one over all these years, and so there's no way he'll be on Discovery because he would just instantly die.
Yeah, why hasn't he been on Discovery yet? That's what I want to know.
It's a great question. But we'll talk about that in a second. Right now we're talking the Enterprise episode Ceasefire, the 15th episode of the second season. It first aired on February 12th of 2003. It was written by Chris Black. Black was a staff writer on Enterprise for its first three seasons. He was also a supervising and a co-executive producer on the show during his tenure. So we both like this episode.
Yes.
So we would compliment him.
Yeah.
But I suppose if people were going to criticize Enterprise, there's always those two names, Berman and Braga, but Black should probably be the third B on there, I guess, like it. But I will say that in 2003, he was nominated for a Hugo Award for Best Dramatic Presentation Short Form for his teleplay for the episode Carbon Creek.
Oh,
that's the one where
the
Vulcans get jobs sweeping up in a bar.
Yes.
After Enterprise, he was a writer and producer on Desperate Housewives. He also wrote for the sci-fi series Cleopatra 2525, Reaper, and Sliders. And he wrote or co-wrote the 1997 film Masterminds, which featured Patrick Stewart.
Ha! That's kind of funny.
We'll talk a little more about Black and his tenure on Enterprise in a bit. This episode was directed by David Strayton. Strayton was something of a stable director for Paramount or UPN back in the day, having directed a lot of their series from week to week. He directed 10 episodes of Enterprise in total.
Okay.
And he also directed episodes of Odyssey 5.
What?
Odyssey, so Manny Coto, B, B, and C. C, Manny Coto should be the other guy that you're mad at if you don't like Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
He is a sci-fi writer, creator, and he's created a couple different things, but he created a series, a Canadian television series called Odyssey 5,
which stars
RoboCop himself, Peter Weller, as one of five time travelers who see the Earth destroyed, and they're able to go back and try to prevent the destruction of the Earth.
Okay.
It only lasted one season. It's what I'm going to start asking people about instead of the Star Lost.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, yeah, he directed episodes of that.
Interesting.
There is no Star Log date given for this episode, only a supplemental log. And your assignment, Mika, if you can, is to give us a 25-word synopsis of Ceasefire.
Okay, I'm bad at counting. Let's see here. Captain Archer is requested to negotiate a ceasefire between Andorians and Vulcans for a planet close to Vulcan.
Where the hell is Porthos?
Yeah. right. And it doesn't go as planned. There we go.
Whoa.
25.
You know, very varies stuck in at the end. Nearly adverb free. That was amazing.
Oof.
Yeah.
All right.
Here are some facts from the memory banks about this episode. This is the first episode of Enterprise to have the monitors on the bridge changed to display their alert status during the tactical alert or the read alert.
Oh, read alert?
Well, that was the little joke when they came up with the... Maybe that's another reason they don't like Enterprise.
Because of Captain. Because of.
If only there was some kind of directive that was above all the other ones that we could look to.
I'll name it Reed after myself.
Maybe we need some kind of status, some alert status. Reed alert? They indulged in that a little bit.
Well, I guess it's right there. But, you know, if you're not a fan of the show, you're going to be like, oh, my God.
They didn't name – Malcolm Reed is a pretty good character name. They didn't name him that just so they could pull the trigger on that joke
halfway
through the show.
I hope not. Because that would be bad news.
Yeah. This episode, of course, continues the Andorians versus the Vulcans arc, which is going to go on for a little while still.
Yep.
But, of course, the last episode in this sort of chain was Shadows of Pajem after the Andorian incident.
Yes.
And this episode introduces Archer's love of Andorian ale.
Yeah. He has a love of it?
Yeah. I guess that's what if he's not drinking that sweet tea. He's drinking Andorian ale.
Oh, they didn't really emphasize that he was enjoying it, you know, in this episode, I don't feel like.
He'll ask for it again.
Yeah, sure.
In future episodes.
Sure, okay.
Let's talk about the guest stars in the episode. Jeffrey Combs appears as Thylek Shran, and Combs is probably the most prolific guest actor on Star Trek in terms of episodes, but not characters. We'll get to that in a moment.
Oh, really?
He appeared in 31 episodes of Deep Space Nine as one character or another, one episode of Star Trek Voyager, and 11 episodes of Star Trek Enterprise. He, of course, played two different characters in one episode of DS9, Dogs of War, where he played Weyoun and Brunt.
Yeah.
And he became only one of three Star Trek actors to ever play two characters in the same episode. He's actually the only one credited with playing those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not like a background or extra character. You know, it says Weyoun and Brunt.
Okay, gotcha.
He did that a second time while playing Weyoun and an unnamed Holosuite guest in What You Leave Behind. So he's actually doubled up twice.
Okay.
And he's appeared in two Star Trek series finales, What You Leave Behind and These Are the Voyages, the finale of Enterprise.
Gotcha.
He moved to L.A. in 1980 to pursue a career in Hollywood, and he landed his first role in the film Honky Tonk Freeway.
Shut up.
And thereby hangs a tale, but it's not for this show.
Whoa.
He would go on to star in, not about him, just about that. It was a massive failure, that movie.
I mean, with a name like that.
I'll tell the tale.
Oh, okay.
The British company EMI, which makes electronics and stuff, but they also like diversified into culture and music, like the Beatles recorded for EMI early in their career.
Okay,
and a lot of the money from the Beatles' albums, which was a lot of money, helped EMI develop its other businesses. And so EMI actually invented the MRI machine. So you can thank, the next time you're getting a scan, you can thank the Beatles.
That's weird.
Love them do. But this was their foray into like Hollywood American films. Uh-huh. And it was a huge failure. It had a lot of stars in it for the time. Huge failure and basically bounced them straight out of Hollywood. So no more EMI.
Well, it's a terrible name. But
it just feels like somebody doing, like, I wouldn't go to Japan and make a sushi roll. I wouldn't try to make a movie about a culture I didn't know anything about.
It feels like the Brits are just making fun of us.
Yeah, it does.
They're just like, we're having a laugh.
That's exactly what it is.
We're just, you know.
Hey, don't laugh at me.
Yeah, right.
Stop it. Combs would go on to star in mostly low-budget horror films, famously collaborating with director Stuart Gordon for Reanimator and From Beyond.
Love it.
Gordon and Combs would reunite in 2009 for Nevermore, An Evening with Edgar Allan Poe, a one-man show starring Combs and directed by Gordon. Combs would go on to supporting roles in many films and TV shows. He's got over 130 credits on IMDb, and he's also a prolific voice actor. He's known specifically for voicing the Scarecrow in Batman the Animated Series,
nice.
The Question in Justice League Unlimited, Ratchet in Transformers Prime, the Leader in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the Rat King in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Brainiac in Injustice 2, the video game.
I love all of that.
I didn't know that last one.
I didn't either.
But all those other ones, man, that's got to be some nice little 39-cent checks coming in, you know? Though they play, talking about cartoons and Toonami, like Transformers.
Yeah.
The Avengers show, the DC shows, they're all playing somewhere in rotation.
Well, that's true.
He's got to get paid on all that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the Question is a character, a great character from DC Justice League that I feel like people don't really know about him. And maybe
I think Jeffrey Combs put a new interesting spin on him.
Okay, all right.
Before Jeffrey Combs, he was, you know, you asked me the other day.
Yeah.
Apropos nothing.
Yeah.
What's the Fountainhead about? Yeah. And I had to explain, like, objectivism and, like, all that sort of thing.
Well, because, like, you go to the Wikipedia page and it just seems like it's BS. I'm sorry.
The Wikipedia one? I think if you try to Google objectivism on the internet, that's where Google is, mm-hmm. idiot. Yeah. Who knows what you're going to find. There's going to definitely be people who have an agenda and yada yada. And if you are listening to this and you believe in objectivism or you're a libertarian, please continue to, we take all kinds. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about the appeal of this character, which was limited when Steve Ditko created him.
The question.
Yeah. And took him as far as he could go without then, you know, basically just adapting Atlas Shrugged or something like that. Like, okay. His views were kind of getting in the way.
And I then see.
Later on, the question just became more of a strange detective kind of character.
With no face.
Yeah, with no face.
Yeah.
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 And Jeffrey Combs, I think, was a big part of, you know, elevating that character.
Yeah, for sure. Justice League, the animated series, is excellent if you haven't watched it.
That's a good podcast.
Yeah, go watch it. There's it's on HBO right now. So, yeah.
If you got HBO.
If you got HBO.
I don't have satellite, so. Yeah. Gary Graham appears as Soval. Graham appeared as Soval 11 times on Enterprise, and he has appeared in 38 TV roles and also been in more than 40 movies in his career. Wow. Aside from Star Trek, he's probably best known for playing Detective Matthew Sykes in the TV adaptation of Alien Nation. He appeared previously in the Trek franchise as the character Tannis in the Voyager episode Cold Fire. Not Ceasefire. Cold Fire.
Just in episodes with fire. I am telling my agent.
I think
only
these are the only two episodes with fire in the title.
Probably. Yeah. I can't imagine there's a lot of episode titles with fire.
Upon the deep. Because it'd have to be some kind of like allusion or quotation or something.
Right.
So what would it be? There's probably one staring us in the face. Fire away. Hit me with your best.
Hit me with your best torpedo. Fire.
Vaughn Armstrong appears as Maxwell Forrest. This is it now. Armstrong has played 12 separate characters in the Star Trek franchise. And here they are. He played Captain Chorus in two TNG episodes. He played Gul Dinar in the DS9 episode Past Prologue. Mm. He played Dr. Telek Ermor in Voyager's episode Eye of the Needle. This is the guy that's like, yeah, I'll give your emails to everybody. Don't worry. He's dead. He's from the past.
Oh,
he's dead. Seskel. He played Seskel, the Cardassian, in two episodes of DS9. He played 2 of 9, or Lancer, in the Voyager episode Survival Instinct. He also played the Vidian captain in the Voyager episode Fury. He played an Alpha Hirogen in Voyager's Flesh and Blood. He played Korath in the last episode of Voyager Endgame. And he played, of course, Maxwell Forrest in Star Trek Enterprise.
Interesting.
I wasn't done. He played a Klingon captain in the Enterprise episode Sleeping Dogs. He also played a Cretacean captain in the Enterprise episodes Vox Sola and A Night in Sickbay.
Okay.
Oh, you should know by now. Also played the mirror version of Captain Maximilian Forrest in the Enterprise episode In a Mirror Darkly.
Oh, right. I forgot.
That's a technicality, but when you get up to, when you're going for the record, you have to count every technicality.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So you played 12 different characters.
Well, I think that Jeffrey Combs needs to get on to Discovery so he can beat him now.
Yeah, he should be embarrassed.
He should.
Armstrong's first film role was in the 1977 film Cinderella 2000.
What?
A sort of Barbarella knockoff, right? You can see it now. You can already see it in your head.
I can totally see it in my head. Wow.
You wish you couldn't.
Yes.
He would go on to a prolific career in film and TV with over 90 guest appearances in various series. He's also an accomplished stage actor in the LA area. Very Christopher nice. Shea plays Talev in the episode. Who's Talev? Talev is one of the Andorian guys. He's on the ship. And when they do the Skype call at the end, he's like, I don't know if there's something wrong with his appliance, but he's weirdly, or it's a character choice, but he's like weirdly leaning forward. He's kind of like,
he's jeering.
Enterprise, move away. He's just kind of like, oh.
This is me as an Andorian trying to be intimidating. Yeah,
just point him right at the guy.
Yeah.
He has played several characters in Star Trek. He was Keevan. Keevan was the one of the first Vorta that we saw in Rocks and Shoals and the Magnificent Ferengi.
Okay.
He is the guy who gets shot in the Magnificent Ferengi.
Okay, great.
Yeah. He also played the alien Samhain in the Voyager episode Think Tank. He played the Suleiman character Sajin in the episode Detained, Enterprise Detained. And of course, Talev.
Very nice.
So, and even in his picture on Memory Alpha, he's just like, he's got that
lean. He's jeering.
That's got just, that Andorian lean.
It's just his look. That's a, don't mind him. He's just doing his thing. This is why we hired him.
He leads with the head.
Yeah, right.
The back of his head.
Right.
He appeared frequently on TV in the 90s and 2000s with guest roles on series like The Drew Carey Show, Will and Grace, Desperate Housewives, and Mad Men. So sometimes he has some comedy chops.
Yeah.
I feel like they just bring him on to be like, he was so good as the Vorta because he was just like, the founders, you know, the founders are the light or whatever.
Yes.
But also like a subtly evil sort of presence to him.
Yes.
But sorry, we've got a Jeffrey Combs already.
He's probably like, Jeffrey, shaking his fist.
And Susie Plaxton, of course, appears as Tara.
Yes.
Tara. Plaxton is a veteran Trek performer with appearances on TNG as Dr. Salar in the episode The Schizoid Man, as Kalar in the episodes The Emissary and Reunion, and also as the female Q in the Voyager episode The Q and the Gray.
Yeah, so Q's wife, life Lady partner, Q. Or the mama of his baby. However,
yeah, Q's baby mama.
Yeah, Q's baby mama. Because I don't know if they actually decide that they're going to be an item or not.
Yeah, but they're above such concepts.
Right.
Plaxton began her career on the stage, including appearing in the Broadway production of La Bette, and has also appeared in guest roles on sitcoms such as Mad About You, Everybody Loves Raymond, and How I Met Your Mother. She's also a singer and an author. She recently wrote and performed the audiobook for her fantasy novel, The Return of King Lillian.
Nice.
So we got a lot of, there's a lot of comedy chops in this episode.
Yeah.
And yet everybody's playing either an emotionless prick or like a rigid person, a personified clenched fist.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's kind of cool that you're able to write a book and then also perform the audio book for it.
Yeah. There's music, she's probably sang the song. She's a singer as well.
Sure. So, I don't think many authors can do both, you know? So.
No, usually you have to hand it off to somebody else because you've got three more books on your contract to write.
That too. Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's get into like a more general discussion of the episode. We've already talked about what I call the Enterprise question, which is,
why do people not like this? I think people were just like, what is this? I don't want this. This isn't what I'm used to. But, so I don't want it.
So is it as maligned as, say, Discovery then? Because you've got a lot of people who are saying the same thing about Discovery. And I think we've boiled it down to mostly, you don't have a problem with this. You don't really care about that. It's just that it's different. I don't want it different.
I think it is, as a series, I think it's more maligned than Discovery is. I feel like people actually, there are fans who actually talk about, but maybe that's hard to tell because Discovery is current, right? It's happening right now. So I don't know, maybe like years down the road when it's not fresh in our heads, maybe people won't be talking about it as much. But I feel like people are talking about Discovery. People are excited about Discovery.
Well, that's interesting. Legacy, that you've introduced the idea of legacy. I wonder if people will be talking about Discovery in the future.
That's what I'm wondering, yeah.
I'm sitting here trying to pick out time intervals. Doesn't matter. Let's say as far away as we are from Enterprise, will people talk about Discovery,
right,
good or bad, the same way?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Allow me to speculate on what people much younger than me think and feel.
Okay, here we go.
That's what Andy Rooney's column is called, right? I don't think that people consume the same way these days. I think that we consume,
that's true,
and it's a drip, and you can get as much as you need, and then when you're done, a computer tells you, here's another thing that's just like that.
Mm.
And then you also watch that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are continually, do you go back and rewatch them? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe you enjoy binging it over and over again. But I think people just keep, I say this like younger people, this is how I consume media now too.
I don't really rewatch.
I grew up in the age where
anymore.
It was so important to know which episode this was, where it was, also what time it's on, because I have to go sit down and watch it. If I don't have a VCR or whatever. And so we take every one of these and we cherish them. And you go, Code of Honor sucks. But I still know every line because I want to watch it over and over again. And even now I sit down and I watch a 10-episode Netflix series.
Right.
And it goes through me like Drano. And then you ask me, okay, what was the name of the guy that did the thing in episode 5 and he's had the ship? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't retain it because I went off and then I watched something else. Yeah, I think that's just how. So I wonder how that will affect the legacy of these shows going forward. I mean, though, the difference is we won't have to. I wrote it down so I wouldn't have to remember, right?
Right.
Henry Jones. Maybe we won't have to remember these things because they'll be at the push of a button at any time. We can just go back and watch it.
Right.
But in the old days, it was almost like I had to, like, here's some wet cement for this episode to roll around in because I need to remember this forever.
Because you didn't know when it was going to be on again.
Yeah. What does this have to do with Enterprise? I don't know.
And I think, you know, I avoided watching it for a really long time just because I've heard such bad things. And I was like, well, I don't know. But then, like, started watching it and just decided I was going to keep an open mind about it and was just like, this is what I don't know. Why? What? You know? And like,
I felt the same way.
I mean, there you can point to maybe like some specific episodes, like things, certain things that maybe weren't necessarily handled.
Well, nowadays super you hear the sexism.
Yes.
And you hear the racism, I guess. Is there racism?
A little bit like towards like, I mean, especially as you get into later seasons because. Because of things that have happened, like people on Earth are less accepting of alien races and like, Flux, the but doctor, like experiences racism and is
Rick experiences like, racism. Is this a Rick and Morty title?
He experiences racism and he gets attacked.
Right.
Well, let me ask you something that I think is intended to be a joke. So Shran calls Shran calls Archer pink skin a lot, and he's like, oh, pink skin humor. He says stuff like that in this. I mean, lose track of how many times he says pink skin.
Yeah.
Is that racist?
Well, yeah.
I mean, nobody's calling him blue skin, which good, because that would be worse, I feel like. And
to say this about Captain Archer. He is not a racist.
Right?
He gets really mad at the Zindi, and he's going to throw some out of an airlock. But any of the Zindi, not just the bug ones.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, for everybody's always yells all the time, and he's always punching people, and he makes bad decisions. But it's like, that's called a flawed character.
I know!
He is space Pollyanna. He has all these aspirations and he wants to do so much and he thinks it's going to be so great shaking hands with all the aliens.
Yeah.
And then like somewhere around like episode like 15, he's thrown into a detention camp.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then a couple episodes later, he's going to be put to death because Mayweather left his communicator on a planet. And he's like, whoa, this job is not what I thought at all.
He gets captured a lot. And he goes through some
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
He does get captured a lot.
He does.
I feel like that's more of a criticism of the show.
Than
supporting my argument. But,
yeah. All right.
But yeah, just do people not know what like a tough situation looks like, you know, something that's didactic, something that's instructional. I feel like they see something. They see the Orion slave women. That's
not great.
Nobody can argue for that, but they see like people doing bad things and they think bad show.
Like
bad show.
Yeah.
No,
right.
No biscuit.
Right. And if something is in a show that is bad, does that mean that the show is bad?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, and there's different like levels of the argument. Like, troublesome fiction is a thing. There is like art that is, you know, instructive and it has a tough message. And a lot of times that art is not executed well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's things like you could try to make a point about something, and yet so I feel like Star Trek does this because Star Trek is so weird about sex. So Star Trek will try to make like a sex point and oversex it.
And then
it's like,
miss the mark. Doesn't,
yeah, all it is just, you know, green boobies or whatever. Similitude, what I mentioned before, is a great example of this because I think it's a great, not only does it introduce the idea of like non-binary genders to Star Trek, but it also is a great story about why it's important that we don't mess with stuff.
Yes.
Even when we see injustice on the other side of our fence, you know, we need to know for sure that we're going to go over that fence and we can't do it on our own.
No.
Trip could have gone back to Archer. They could have called, you know, the Admiral. They could have talked to the Earth High Commander, the Vulcans, and said, there's a whole slave race in this thing. Like, we got to do something. But mm-hmm. instead, Tripp's like, I'm gonna do it myself. And he just really screwed things up. And people get mad at Archer for, actually, I'm not even sure. I've heard people are mad at Tripp for, you know, bringing his like white straight male thing in, his cis male thing to try to fix it. And I've heard people mad at Archer for yelling at Tripp for trying to fix it.
Right.
And I'm like, the episode accomplished exactly what it was supposed to accomplish.
Right.
We fly away. Everybody feels like crap. That's the point. We blew this one. We're not. I'm not Captain Picard. We're not going to nail this.
We're going to make mistakes.
Like, we screwed this up really bad.
What is that?
But no, that's bad show. No biscuit.
I know. What is the episode where they have to clone Tripp to?
That's Similitude. Oh, sorry. I meant Cogenitor before.
Oh, okay.
So put that back into my rant if you're still listening to this show. You haven't clicked away because
I knew what episode you were talking about. I just was like, I wasn't sure if I was remembering the title wrong. But you've mentioned this before, so I'm not gonna tell a story from your point of view, but like,
great.
But just like, you know, they're just like bright eyed and bushy tailed when they first get out there, and they're just like, you know, saying hello to everybody. Like, hello, you know.
Hi, we're from Earth.
Hey, neighbor.
Need a cup of sugar?
Yeah, right.
Hi, Delio.
Yeah, and then they get, like, doors slammed in their face.
Yeah, everybody they run into is like, what are you talking to me?
Because they have...
We don't talk out here.
Right.
It's space.
Well, here's something that I guess, something that I have, an argument I have with the Vulcans. They were like, you know, the humans aren't ready, they're not ready. They did nothing to really prepare them for what life and culture it would be like.
No, and we can talk about, now get back to the episode.
Yeah.
We can talk about the cracks in the Vulcan society that are not fully opened and explored until, you know, later in the show.
Do you think that's something else people don't like? Surak's Katra. Yes.
And they find out that the Vulcan High Command, or at least the leader of the Vulcan High Command, has been...
Yeah.
You know, against them the whole time. And so, sure, the humans need seasoning before they go out into space, but like 100 years?
Yeah, right.
And so they were being held back, like on purpose, by the Vulcans.
Yes.
Or at least the Vulcan higher-ups.
Right, right, the High Command. And I know...
And that's because it's so rushed. That's never really delivered in such a way. Plus, this was just not a serial show still. It was still standalone episodes.
Yeah.
And then they got more into that. But if they had been really growing that idea, maybe we would. We don't have to cut back to who's that actor that played the Falcon president or whatever. We don't cut back to his office every week and be like, they're getting smarter.
But no, we'll I don't need to see
make
that.
Sure they fail the test.
Right.
That was a metaphor, sir.
Yeah, right. And Jonathan, I mean, Archer is really pissed because he feels like, you know, like they held his dad back. Like his dad had dreams and aspirations about going into space, and because it was delayed for so long, was not able to do that. So he kind of feels like not only is he doing this for himself in America, he's doing it for his dad.
Daddy issues.
I know.
Wow.
He's got a dog. His dog is really cute.
Isn't it cool that like Captain Picard's dad was like really mean and like really drove a wedge between him and his brother, but like he never thinks about it,
no.
Or he never has to, like, he does see a fantasy version of him in Tapestry, but, like, doesn't have to fight, like, an alien version of him.
Right.
Or anything. Just, like, my dad was a dick.
Yeah.
I lived my life.
The end.
Yeah, right.
The end.
Now, like, there is a Picard show now, but if we did Picard now, it'd be like, oh, father, and his father is actually the leader of a clan from space.
Oh, no.
And he's got to fight him. And you never told mom that.
Yeah, I know, right?
What is this, a Marvel movie?
Sounds like it.
Speaking of dads and space dads, our space dad for this show is Archer, and we've talked a little bit about his character, but how do you think that he handles a problem compared to other captains? Oh, and how does Enterprise handle problems compared to, you know, other shows?
I think one thing that Archer tries to do to the best of his ability is he tries to gather evidence first before he...
They're always discovering things, aren't they?
A decision. Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, specifically in this episode, which I guess we haven't really talked about a whole lot, but
we're making the case for Enterprise here.
I know. Shran wants him to do negotiations. Eventually, he convinces Saval to go down to the planet with them.
Yeah.
And they get shot at. And it's really upsetting to everybody involved. Saval is like, you know, the Andorians shot at us and everything. And Archer is like, we don't know that, you know. And like, so he is, the way that he approaches the, I mean, obviously a horrible situation, but the way he approaches it is like, we don't have all the facts yet. We were shot at. That much we know. We right. don't know who shot at us.
Yeah.
And so he's not going to make a decision or like say who is at fault yet, you know, even yeah. though.
And both the Andorians and the Vulcans are not happy to have this guy no. come in. But when you think about it, this is what you would do if you hired a mediator.
Right.
Or if you went to like couples counseling. Mm-hmm. Because Archer, they've been doing this for 100 years. And Archer doesn't yes. know anything about it.
Yeah.
So he is entering with a completely neutral stance. And it is neutral even though both sides don't feel like it is, because he likes Shran, but he doesn't know if he can trust the Andorians.
Right.
And he knows the Vulcans uh-huh. through and through and doesn't like them.
Doesn't
so
necessarily
he's,
trust them.
You know, it's a flip skip to the end. If a compromise is a decision that everybody's a little bit unhappy with, he's the perfect negotiator because yeah. he kind of hates both sides a little bit.
Right, exactly. And I think it's interesting, too, that it is this planet that has both a Vulcan and an Andorian name. Like the Vulcan yeah. name is, I don't know if I'm saying
Pon Makkar.
Pon Makkar. And then the Andorian name is Waitan. So it's very important to both of them, and it has this huge long history, and
there's a West Bank part of it, and there's
I know it seems so similar, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
I just think that the Archer is a diplomat, but he's not afraid to like yell at you. Like Picard is like
he's the tough love diplomat.
Yeah, yeah. Like Picard is.
Some people
like,
would call that being judgmental, but
some might.
This is for you. I'm yelling at you for you.
Yeah, I mean he's like an assertive diplomat. I don't know if I'm really selling this here, but like
I swear that Archer had a fuse.
Yeah.
In the earlier part of the show.
He did.
But I feel like even this early into the show, the fuse is done.
It's gotten a lot shorter.
And so it's only like half of an act for us, but they call the Enterprise in from, you know, multiple light years away to do this. And then immediately sits down and Gary Graham's like, why are you here?
Yeah, like, I know.
You called me here. It's
because
like, no,
they thought the Vulcans.
The other guys want you.
Yeah, right. We don't want you.
And then immediately Archer's like, well, screw up. Then I'm going to leave.
Yeah, right.
And then Gary Graham's like, wait. Okay, maybe we could have you. And he's like, oh, do you want help from moi?
And he makes such a big deal out of it.
He makes a deal out of it.
He milks it so much. So Vulcans need help from them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, in 90 years, but like, also, maybe the humans aren't unpetty yet.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And maybe, like, people aren't used to seeing their Star Trek heroes be petty.
Well, here's something else. I have another question for you. Like, since they didn't really know what the culture of space was going to be like into exploring, because nobody told them just about anything, maybe he was just trained to do a scientific exploration.
I think
and
he's
meet
trained
aliens
because
and
he.
Stuff.
But when you think about it, and you look at what he does in the episode, he really is sometimes badgering. That's a tactic, right?
Yes.
But he does sit down and he goes to Shran, and he knows because he's dealt with Shran that these people, you know, they meet force with force. They will roll over you if you like. Oh, what's up? So immediately he's like, "What are you guys doing? You got these prisoners here." Let yeah. these prisoners go.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just be your errand boy. You know, you better give me an offer that makes sense or I'm going to walk. And then
tough
he goes
love.
Back to the Vulcans and he's like, look, this is your best chance here. You've been yeah. fighting for 100 years. All they want to do is talk to you.
Yeah.
You're the guy in charge. So he's using, you know, tactics. He's just sort of like
that's true.
Barking in between good points.
Yeah.
Then, you know what? If this was set now, in the modern day, it was a period piece, and let's say an American general was going to have an Afghani general and whoever they're fighting talk about something. You would praise him for, if Brad Pitt was playing this character, you would praise him for like getting tough on the one guys and then telling the other guys, I don't know if we can help you, and kind of like stringing them along. You'd be like, this guy's really good at what he does.
He knows what he's doing.
This guy's the Don Draper of the battlefield.
Yeah.
But like when a Star Trek guy does it, we're like, no, he's supposed to offer everybody candy and Earl Grey tea and stuff. See,
maybe that's what it is. Like we have this idyllic view of Trek. Yeah. And when Trek doesn't fit into that, we're like, we want to throw a table up and be like, what is this?
Enter Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I know.
Where, you know, admirals are sleeping with with captains, and the captains are, you know, opening evil fortune cookies, and there's all kinds. And they have a murder dungeon on deck 15.
I mean, I would say I have other issues with Discovery, not necessarily those issues.
But if people don't dig any farther, then I know that you're digging.
Yeah.
Then they're seeing those things and going, with the same track.
And they're like, just walking
Trek
away.
It can be a ton of things, though.
Yeah, I know. I think so, too.
Well, I'm glad that we're in agreement. Let's also talk about the irony of the fact that Enterprise is the series that is, in my opinion, stay with me here.
Okay.
This is a premise. We call this a premise.
Uh-huh.
Is one of the most anti-authoritarian series in the Star Trek franchise.
Mm.
But it was made in the wake of 9/11. With all the attendant jingoism and patriotism that sprung up in media post 9/11. It's a show that many people and myself have pointed out. It fits very much into the mold of like, we're going to do it. America, the Federation is going to be formed and we're going to move on.
Yep.
It's our Independence Day.
It has a lot of underlying tones of patriotism, even though there's not like a United States flag on the Enterprise, that as far as I remember. But
no Omega Glory.
Yeah, right.
What's going on with the Yangs and the Khans? Right. Let's head back there.
Oh God. And then I
want a sequel to that.
And like Trip isn't singing I Pledge Allegiance to the United States.
It's just so, it's so great because
that episode of TOS, yeah.
You know that you have to work. Sure, you can change things up like fast, right? But you know you have to be working on these things ahead of time. So Enterprise was, you know, the first 12 scripts or whatever were locked like before anybody woke up on September 11th, right? Yeah. And then also you got the characters too, right? Mm-hmm. So sure, there's the 2000 election, but I think Florida and the idea of Florida became a very important part of the national identity going forward era. And yeah, obviously, it's supposed to be Cape Canaveral, early astronauts. There's always that part of the culture.
Yes.
But he's like, yeah, I'm from Pensacola, Florida.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, I'm getting my French fried crowdads up on this.
He's just like, I like pecan pies.
Yeah, there's never been a character like that before.
No.
And I think it's, once again, I think it's great because I'm the guy that always wants the Star Trek characters to be like, oh, is Canada in Alaska or is it in America? I don't know anything. I'm a human alien.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, I like the characters of Enterprise that play water polo. And they're like, give me some of those just fried gator bits.
I know.
I can have it both ways.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I don't know. I actually really like Trip.
I love Trip.
You know.
I never watch These Are the Voyages.
Yeah.
Although in this episode he says that his underwear is fire retardant.
What? Does he say that?
Yeah, well, something to that effect, right?
I don't remember that.
At the beginning of the episode, he's talking about how the engines are running too hot, and she's like, "They're fine," and he's like, "My underwear is fireproof, but I'm not gonna light it up to see if it's true."
Oh, okay.
So I guess at the end of the series, we know his underwear is okay.
Oh, jeez.
It's been a long road.
No.
Help it to see.
No, stop it.
The bummer version.
It's already kind of bummery, isn't it? Like, it's
what?
Not.
No.
Okay. All right. I guess not. I mean, gosh, some of my only criticisms, I guess, of Enterprise is that some of the other characters they don't really give them a whole lot to do.
Yeah. I'm so glad that I'll never have to talk about Enterprise after this.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I just feel like every time we've talked about Enterprise, maybe half of the show has been like, Why don't people like Enterprise?
Uh-huh.
But now I've got the unmovable forces met the unmovable object.
We've talked about why people don't like
Two giant Enterprise fans are going to have a hoedown, and then we'll never have to. We can just talk about cogenitor later, and it's no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, but that was intentional.
Yeah.
They knew that what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Are you mad that you don't know anything about Reese on Discovery? Not really.
Not... I mean, yes what about and Bryce? No.
And what about which one is which?
I have a huge issue with. And like make them differentiated from each other and make them fully realized characters.
What if they could hold their breath for a long time? Would that be a good...
Don't get me started.
Character trait?
We're talking about Discovery now.
So... Not knowing the story of Enterprise, like I want to, like I was talking about, mm-hmm. I do know some stuff. And I know that the show was on the bubble and was basically dead, maybe even dead after it was renewed for a fourth season.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a pity renew.
Right.
And at that point, because of the failure of the films at that time, Insurrection was not a total failure, but people didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's under... you know, Berman's control or whatever, he was seen as, you know, being not good for the franchise anymore.
Yeah.
Him and Braga. And so at this point, I think they retained their leadership roles, but they were essentially figureheads by mm-hmm. the time the fourth season came around,
mm-hmm.
which is when Manny Coto, a guy who was a writer on the third season, but a real blue chipper, and clearly, I mean, it's creative, he's created all these other shows,
right?
Was given the reins of the fourth season. And then that's when we got the Tellarites and the Andorians and the forming the Federation and racist RoboCop.
Oh my God! And the
he's a cop.
The Nazi aliens.
The Nazi aliens.
You remember that?
That started in the third season.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, we should probably talk about the Andorians because this is, you know, one of their episodes.
Yes.
And the idea that they took the Andorians from blue guys,
more or less,
into. so much more. They found a frontier that had not been finaled, and they went, let's make something out of these guys.
Mm-hmm. I really like the makeup that they did for them in Enterprise. I like that their antennas move.
You don't think it's
such
too
a silly
much?
Thing, but...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, there's, I mean, they use it to effect, and it's labor intensive, and there's a reason that they didn't even bother for Discovery, because they just didn't want to do it. But
I think it looks so cool.
Yeah, and you get moments.
I think it really
you
sells
get moments
it.
Like when Susie Plaxton is like, just, you know, laying down fire, and then Archer sneaks up behind her, and he's like, hold it, and her reaction is her antenna goes straight up like this.
Yes!
And then she turns around.
It's great. Yeah. And then earlier, like, Shran is like, she's like giving him her opinion, and then like he yells at her and they like go back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like a dog's tail or something like
right.
that.
Right. That's
I mean,
all
that's,
it is.
That's all it is.
They're cats. That's all it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right.
And so how hard is that?
It's not that hard.
I guess they would break down though and they wouldn't work right.
Yeah, but...
no actor wants to have their tick blown by a robot tentacle that's not doing what it's supposed to do.
Well, no, but I mean, I still think it looks cool.
So it's neat that we get to learn more about the Andorians in Enterprise as a series, but how much do they really change throughout... the Star Trek franchise. I mean, I guess they're wearing chainmail. So is that new or is that old in TOS? But I feel like the description of them in my FASA role-playing supplement book was that they are a proud warrior race with antenna. That's what they are here.
Yes.
I'm not sure they're any different if we ever saw them in Berman Trek, which we don't really for the most part.
No.
You know, like, are they not growing? Because the Vulcans, and thanks to a lot of things that happened in the fourth season, the Vulcans change a lot.
Yes.
They get rid of their bad rulers.
Yep.
They find the Kirshara.
Right.
They make a point in this episode of the Andorians saying, these Vulcans just lie all the time. And because the Vulcans lied back then.
Yeah, right. Which, by the time Spock came around, he's like, I'm a Vulcan, I can't lie.
Right, yeah. The Kirshara, you know, and the discovering of the teaching of Surak, you know, makes them change as a people. And of course, they still... they have pointy ears and they're you know, supercilious.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I wonder how the Andorians have changed over the 200 years. And I wonder what they're like in Star Trek Discovery.
Well, we see them a little bit in Discovery.
Sure.
Right? In this latest season. But I think it's one Andorian on his own. And he's different because he's had this horrible experience happen to him, right? Like, he's experienced
PTSD. Clearly, like,
PTSD.
Wherever Andoria is they're not going to the Emerald Chain and saying, you know, we need our person back.
No, this is, nobody's looking for him.
Or they are. I don't know. I don't pause it to, like, read all the little Easter eggs on the maps, so I don't know if, like, Andoria is or is not a part of the Federation in the 32nd century.
I have no idea. And then I guess, like, a good question that you brought up earlier is, like, why aren't the Andorians more present in other series? Like, is it the blue makeup? Like, did people just not think they were as interesting? Like, I mean, I know that the Klingons, that's something that, like, persists and, you know, people find forever fascinating. But why not the Andorians? Are they just not as fleshed out as an alien race?
Well, they're not fleshed out. And then we get some flesh, and it's like, oh, I don't want this flesh.
Oh, my goodness.
The white. I am Andorian the white now.
Yeah. No, we don't need that.
Right? The white versions that are blind and telepathic?
Yes. Yes, it's I do, like, remember that. Sometimes there's a misstep, or, you know, that's not...
I'll say, though, that's pretty TOS. It's a pretty TOS idea.
I guess.
I can see that happening.
Yeah.
In TOS.
I mean, sometimes they have some TOS ideas, so.
Yeah, certainly. They certainly punch their way out of many situations.
Do you think Kirk or Archer, who has more fistfights? Like, pound for pound, who do you think has more fistfights? because I think both of them.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, right?
Archer may. Okay, so let's. Are you talking? Well, here. I think Archer.
Okay.
But percentage-wise, Kirk. Because Archer had more episodes.
Oh. Right?
So Archer may be getting in more fights, but I think a proportionately less number.
I see. Okay. Good answer. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, what would have happened if TOS had gotten more seasons?
It would have gotten
weirder.
Weirder and more off track, but they might have found some new balance going forward. Maybe. You know, Artie Singer gets his feet under him, and the show became, you know, in the third season, it becomes more romantic, and it becomes more sort of emotional, and there are some kind of weird ideas in a show that already had weird ideas.
Sure.
And it also becomes, a lot of that is the constraint of, we have no money anymore, so we're going to do, like, those, you know, the villain's lair in Batman is just... a bunch of black muslin curtains, you know, with like a question mark hung on it.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, if their budget hadn't totally been cut, even with the brain drain of all the talent leaving, it would have become something.
Mm-hmm.
But if it had continued to succeed and been that thing, then maybe who knows what would have happened.
Like, do you think we would have still had
all of the rest of Trek?
And, yeah. Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the fact that it was cut off and people yearned for it so much and created cons and fan clubs and
books,
all this stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe it would have altered itself to the point where it was ready to go neck and neck with Star Wars when Star Wars showed up. I don't know.
Yeah. Oof. Do you feel like Trek is kind of like the older brother that got surpassed by Star Wars? Do you think it got surpassed by Star Wars?
What surpassed?
Let's say. Do you think that more people are fans of Star Wars than Trek?
Star Wars is the younger brother.
Uh-huh.
Who kind of, you know, messed around for a while. We didn't know about this, what he was going to do. And then he got a job with the Houston Astros.
Okay.
In the front office. And eventually he worked his way up to vice president of the organization.
Uh-huh.
And so he's young. He's got a lot of money and he's throwing it around.
Yep.
And, you know, a little DUI every once in a while, cover that up, no problem. It's fine.
Wow.
Star Trek is the studious older student who has to set an example.
Right.
And goes, gets high marks, you know, in college, comes out.
Yes.
Doesn't really know what it's going to do with itself.
Uh-huh.
Goes, should I get a grad degree? Goes back in and gets a grad degree. All while... the younger brother is raking in the Houston Astros money.
Uh-huh, right.
And eventually Star Trek comes out. Now it's got two masters, and it gets a teaching position
uh-huh.
at a small private university
uh-huh.
In the Great Lakes area. And okay. it's just going to teach, French lit
uh-huh.
Around the time of, the Age of Enlightenment.
Sure.
It's never going to make a ton of money, but it's going to have a very solid salary and a large selection of tweed blazers with leather patches at the elbows.
What more could you want?
And then every Thanksgiving has to see, beep, beep, oh, here he comes in the Dodge Viper, its younger sibling.
Star Wars.
Houston Astros on the vanity
on
plate.
On the vanity plate.
All the vowels taken out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You asked.
I did ask. I'm sorry I asked. No.
Battlestar Galactica becomes part of the family through marriage to the sister, which we haven't announced yet.
Oh my gosh.
Which is?
Oh, who's the sister? Blake Seven? I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know.
I want to meet the sister.
Oh my goodness.
She sounds hot. As we come to the end here, screeching to a halt of this episode, anything that you have not said? I realize that, like, here's my final word as I once again ask you a question and answer it. But I want to set you up, though. This episode's fine. I don't think this is a great episode.
Oh, you don't think so?
Oh, well, let's hear why you think it is one.
Well, I think it has like a lot of...
I feel like that should have been the body of the show, but we did the other thing.
Well, I think it has a lot of really great lines, in it. And I think it can be very entertaining while it's dealing with very serious subject matter.
Yeah.
I
love it at the end when we don't really see the negotiation, but we get the fact that, we get the idea that the door's been opened.
Yes.
And then, of course, Shran's like... Well, nobody's happy, so I guess that's what we want. Let's have a drink and be not happy.
Uh-huh.
And then Gary Graham's like, yeah, we don't drink. Again,
with
the antenna, what?
Just the look of death in Tran's eyes and everything.
Is this deal off already?
Yeah, right.
But then they all drink. I don't think it's fair that they make the Vulcans drink, though. Come on, Shran.
I know.
So Vol's off the wagon now.
Yeah, right.
Gets back in his shuttlecraft. 62 years.
Oh, my God.
62-year chip.
I never thought of it like that. Wow.
I mean, you wouldn't like force somebody with AA chip to drink.
No, of course not.
So why
is
it okay to make a Vulcan drink?
I don't know. He's the one who concedes. He does. You know, he's like in this.
Yeah, that's what a guy would do.
All right.
Okay. All right.
But I love. But I love when Saval is like, "What is their fixation with our ears?" Meaning, like, why are humans like obsessed with their ears?
Yeah.
And, like,
right. Yeah.
And then T'Pol is like, "I believe they're envious."
Yeah. Vulcan size matters joke.
Yes, exactly.
Something that I like, that's like a character touch, and they do it, I think they make a point of doing it often, is there's that scene where Phlox tells Archer, you know, that there's like this bug on the planet,
mm-hmm.
so we have to irradiate you.
Yeah.
Before? I don't know how it works. Anyway.
Yeah, he's giving him radiation.
Here's what I thought. It's a mutagenic pathogen, so maybe it will mutate the bacteria in you. So he's irradiating Archer to get rid of the extra bacteria, so the chance that he'll have something mutate into something lethal on him mm-hmm. is less. That's all I can think of. It's like the disinfecting in the Andromeda strain or something like that.
Right.
But it's basically a chance to put a door with a window between them so they can have a little thing.
Yeah, that's
and
what it's there for.
It's a nice little moment, and it also gives Billingsley something to do in the episode.
You know, Phlox talks about how he was a medic in the military, and he, you know, even when there is, peace negotiations going on, you don't know what you're going to run into. So just kind of giving him a warning and a heads up and to be careful. But I do think that is, a really good scene. But I guess the radiating him worked because that never comes up again in the episode.
My point. It was totally a construct just to create this scene, which may have been a contractual concession to Mr. Billingsley.
It may have.
But could have been, is meant to be a scene that gives you a little touch of character.
Yes.
Which is something that I think that this show has in spades, if people are willing to look for it.
Yes, I think so too.
That being said, there is a lot of talking in this episode, and it is a negotiation talking. I'm not saying there should be more action, but there's just like kind of the dead spot in the middle of the episode where people are kind of talking about what the problem is, but not mm-hmm. they're just kind of taking the longest amount of time to say it. And then the next thing you know, second shuttle trip, they crash.
Yes.
Extended fight scene that we don't really need, which Enterprise is guilty of.
Yes.
And that's over. Like when he's sneaking up on the one Andorian, I'm like, okay, we're about halfway through. It's like, no, the next he's going to find Susie Plaxton and yeah. It's done.
And then it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then Tran's going to find him and yeah. I think that this is a great character episode for Saval as well, because I think we get to we see more character development from him as well as Tran, and we see that he, even though he's very stubborn, in the end he is willing to listen to Tran, and we see that he is capable of change, and that he you know
yeah. I mean, it's a long time coming, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah.
About a year and a half of this show.
Yeah, it
to
is.
To get one note out of him that's like, you haven't totally messed this up.
Right. Right, exactly.
And Tran's like, hey, he likes you. It's like, nah, I don't know about
I
that.
I wouldn't go that far. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
Well, now that we've reached the end of the show, we usually talk about space dads. We know that your favorite captain is Picard.
Yes.
And I'm wondering what you think that Picard would think of Archer's command style and how he handled this particular situation. He's in his computer. He's got an Earl Grey on the desk.
Sure.
Bleep, bleep, going through his little trapezoid computer.
Right.
He's reading the old logs, the Archer logs, Star log. We don't know the date.
Right.
What would he think of Archer's solution?
I think he would have thought that Archer did a pretty good job, but he probably would have, you know, done it with less yelling. And, I mean, I don't know how much that comes through in the report, but I think, you know, maybe he wouldn't have been as much tough love as Archer was, you know, and would have done his best maybe not to put himself in a situation where he's in the middle of a war zone. But also trying to make right. Tran happy. Like maybe
they want me to go where? Oh, no, no, I'm not going down
right,
there.
Right, right. Like, no. maybe he would try to convince Tran to do negotiations where they ended up doing negotiations somewhere that is a neutral ground, the Enterprise.
Yeah. I was thinking that Kirk would just go beam Tran and Saval directly to my ready room, and well, then we'll just...
Yeah.
That's how we'll do it.
Probably. Right. And so they can't complain.
Yeah.
I think that Archer was trying to be respectful of everybody and, you know, and
Probably too much. Because if you look at this political situation,
yeah.
The Vulcans just invaded a planet that the Andorians had total claim to and then relocated the civilian population.
Yep.
And then like Saval even says, "Oh no, I was here before. I was here those many years ago as an intelligence officer." So he was like Mayor Peeting around up in this piece.
Yeah.
Doing God knows what.
Right.
And so, like, but, you know, everybody's made mistakes.
Right.
I mean, like they did come to this accord 100 years ago or whatever it was. And so Tran is now violating that because they've just rolled in and said, we're back.
Right.
But
after 100 years.
Seems like there's an aggressor or an initial aggressor here.
Yes. And it's like the Vulcans didn't care about this planet until the Andorians came and started terraforming it.
Yeah. And Picard would have an example in Shakespeare that addressed specifically that.
Yes, he would.
As You Like It, I think that's where the terraforming is, right? can't remember. Well, now that we reach the end of the show, and for your past appearances on the program, you will receive a promotion to full commander, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And of course, you've been doing some great work in the turbo lift department, but now, at full commander, you're a full commander now.
Yes.
It might be time to branch out.
The turbo lift might be too small.
I got to give you the, well, it's an occupancy 8. I need to give you the opposite of the Lieutenant Picard speech. You know, in Tapestry, when Picard's like, "What do you think, I could never be in command?" And they're like, you're such a good science guy.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
This is the opposite. This is like, are you really going to work in the turbo lift for the rest of your life?
Okay, yeah.
You're like third in command on the ship.
Yeah, right. Okay. I think I'd probably, science seems pretty cool.
you never thought about moving up to the bridge, to the big chair? They said it couldn't happen.
That's scary.
But from turbo lifts. To the bridge.
Destination? Okay.
Bridge.
I mean, all right, I could do the bridge maybe, but like, what would I do? Like
the big
to the communications?
Chair. The... Captain!
Oh, Captain!
You're such a good turbo lift person.
I did it to myself. I did it to myself.
Well, Commander Mikan Hanna, thanks for joining me to talk about Star Trek and the Star Trek universe. If people want to continue the conversation, and they can, at EISTpod on Twitter and the Enterprising Individuals Facebook page, where can people find you online?
You can find me at justenoughtrope.com or at Mikan Hanna on Twitter. And Sailor Noob is available wherever you listen to podcasts. We're Sailor Noob on Facebook and @noob_sailor on both Twitter and Instagram.
Amazing. Well, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks again for having me.
We're signing off until the next mission. Hailing frequencies closed. Backtracking is back for an all-new season. Hi, I'm Caliban.
And I'm Gooey Fame.
And we'd like to introduce you to Backtracking, the podcast that explores the real-world inspirations behind your favorite episodes of Star Trek.
From historical events to classical literature to blockbuster films, we go where no pod has gone before to seek out the origins of classic Trek tales.
Did you know, Gooey, that the TNG episode Too Short a Season was an allegory for the Iran-Contra affair?
Yeah, only sweatier. Did you know that the Enterprise episode Regeneration was an homage to the John Carpenter film The Thing?
Archer and T'Pol freezing to death over a bottle of whiskey would have been a controversial ending.
As a dog lover, Archer would not like The Thing, I'm guessing.
Oh my god, movie night is canceled. Join us every other Thursday for a journey back to the beginnings of the Trek universe.
Backtracking is available wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Porthos!